when someone comes to you and asks, you know, Father, how can I know God's will in my life? Where's your starting point with them?
Well, you can imagine, since I'm the vocation director in Calgary, that is probably the number one question I am asked. And not even just as I do this work, but I think it's the most pressing question for an active and faithfully practicing Catholic. That is the characteristic hallmark of the Christian, is the desire to do God's will, to please Him and to serve Him. And so it's not a light question, but I'm afraid people are disappointed to discover that the answer is more ambiguous than they would like. And it has to do with the fact that, yes, there is God's will. Okay, God, in all of His knowledge and wisdom and power, He has what we would call a perfect will for all of human existence, and then for each individual person specifically. He has a perfect will. But the first thing after creating us that God gave us is our will. And so we have free will. When we have free will, our free will has to correspond with God's perfect will for our life. But you will not know God's perfect will for your life until the end of your life. Because God's perfect will sees the entirety of our existence in an instant. At one and the same time, that the moment He infused our soul into that fertilized egg, in that act of love in our parents, when He made us who we are in that moment, He already knew the final breath we would take. And every single second and every detail of our life inside of that span. So God sees all of that at once and knows exactly how and why and for what He has created us. But He has created us with freedom. And so then we have to spend our life going through that experience and trying to navigate what to do with ourselves. In other words, what to do with our free will. But I'm afraid that most people have this idea that because God has a plan, their mission is to figure it out. And they're afraid of figuring it out wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if they figure it out wrong, then they are sinning. And if they've sinned, then they're going to go to hell. That can't be further from the truth. That if God created us with free will and a lack of perfect knowledge, how could He be a good and loving God? Because we would absolutely get it wrong. How can we know with the end of our story before it's even begun and fill in all the blanks perfectly? Especially since we're fallen, sinful human beings. He knows that we're going to fluctuate all throughout our life. He knew we would before He created us. We have to have an end goal. There has to be a destination, or else you can't have a beginning. So that's why He has a perfect will for us. But then that's where His permissive will comes in. Where then God, He works with us. He accommodates our free will. He finds a way to navigate and fix for us where things go off course. As St. Paul says in Romans 8:28, God works to the good in all things. And so He doesn't just work to the good in our life when we've figured out exactly the right way to live it. He's always working towards our good. And we're just trying to correspond with that.
Sometimes we have this idea of God's will is, here's plan A, and here's plan B. Mm-hmm. I want plan A, but if I make a mistake, now we have to resort to plan B for the rest of my life. And now I kind of live in a second best life. I know as a young adult, I had this viewpoint, and actually it paralyzed me And I didn't want to make decisions because I didn't want to mess it up. It wasn't so much that I was afraid that I was going to go to hell, but I was like, I'm going to mess up God's plan. So maybe I just won't make any decision.
Right.
So what is, and it very could be true that somebody's watching this and think, oh, I knew this is what I should have done, but this is what I did. Now, do I have to live my life in plan B for the rest of my life? What would you say?
Yes. You have to live the life you're living. I'm sorry to break it to you, but there's no way around it. But why look upon that as though it's a bad thing? Because before he made you, God knew you were going to do that. And so I don't like talking about plan A and plan B, because it sets us in the middle of this dichotomy forever, where you're perpetually, potentially choosing the lesser thing in your life. Instead, we need to see our life on a continuum. We are building into our next thing. I've said this on your program before, but I've always remembered something you said in a mission I heard you preach so long ago about the only thing we need to ask ourselves is, what is the next loving thing that I can do? The next loving thing I can do. Even when we say that I'm called to do, we give the impression that here I am back in Sherlock Holmes mode, where I have to solve this mystery of what's the next thing I'm supposed to do. What you're supposed to do is love God. That's why St. Augustine says, love and do what you will. If love is your starting point, you can't go wrong. Can you deviate off of what God would have had in mind for you in his perfect plan? Yes. Yes, you can. And is that unfortunate? I don't even know if it's unfortunate. God knew it was going to happen, and he still has a plan for how to make it possible for you to be saved with that deviation. Does it mean that you're going to have some hardships in your life that you wouldn't have had if you had done something else? It could also mean that. But will you know any different? No, because that's the one that you're on. I used to love those books when we were kids, the Choose Your Own Adventure. You know, okay, you get to the cave. Turn to page 32 if you want to go up the ladder. And turn to page 64 if you want to go further into the cave. Did you make a mistake if you turned to page 64 instead of 32? No, it's not a mistake. Those are two options. Now at the end you can say, oh, but there was a bear in the cave. So obviously it was a mistake. Well, what was at the top of the ladder? So we can't go through life and say, now I'm having a hardship, I guess I've made a mistake. We make mistakes when we know we've done wrong, when we've sinned, when we've chosen wrong, when we disobey our conscience. That's when you've done wrong. So you get raised in a home where your parents tell you to be very careful about where you go with your friends, and your friends invite you to go to a party where you know there's going to be drinking and drugs and promiscuous behavior, and you know you shouldn't go to that party. Everything in you is telling you don't do this. And then you go. Now, maybe nothing bad happens while you're there, but the whole time you're there, you're racked with guilt, because you know you shouldn't even be there. That's when we can say we are violating God's will for our life. When we know we have actively chosen something contrary to what we should be doing. But if the option is shovel your grandmother's driveway or go clean up your grandfather's recycling, you can't say, well, I don't know which one is God's will. Just pick one. Love. Go and love. You don't have to worry about which one is which, unless one of them is going to violate God's law. And that's why we have to discern. Discernment is about making sure we don't succumb to our passions and just follow something that I want for my sake because it will give me something desirable. That's when we can trail off in the wrong direction.
When you see people struggling and asking this question, you know, what is God's will for my life? you still have to make decisions. You still have to choose. And sometimes these are big choices, and they do matter. There's consequences to them. Maybe it's a difference between two good choices. We live in a world where it seems like there's an infinite amount of choices before us, whereas maybe 100 years ago, that wasn't the case. You know, you grew up on a farm, well, then you were going to be a farmer. Mm-hmm. Your dad was a blacksmith, you would be a blacksmith. If maybe you had a little bit of money or the opportunity, you went to a religious order that was in your community, but you didn't fly around the world checking out different convents or religious orders. But now it's almost because there's so many different choices and opportunities, it paralyzes people. So what would you say to that when a person has this infinite amount of choices, but you still got to choose? Is there some guiding principles that you would offer them between choosing between two goods?
Well, that's you've completely diagnosed the problem. It's what I jokingly call the Boston Pizza menu crisis. I never like going to Boston Pizza because they give you this 25-page menu and you have to sit there and go through it for 10 minutes and then you go back to the beginning again and you're so afraid you're going to order something that you're going to be disappointed with. Oh, what difference does it make? You just need to eat. You know, when you have so many choices, you get paralyzed. And so we live in a culture at this particular junction, history, people don't know how to not have multiple choices. Everyone spends their life scrolling on their phone. You can scroll through everything now. And therefore, people so afraid that they're going to make a disappointing decision in their life, don't make any decision. But the decision not to make a decision is a decision. And it is the one that will punish you worst of all. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should make impulsive decisions. We should think about things. But we need to give ourselves some guidelines to follow. And the first guideline is to make sure we're eliminating anything that would be sinful. Are any of these options in violation of God's law? Are they only attractive to me because I know they'll bring me some pleasure or some selfish gain? If we know that, gone. Eliminate those. We don't even have to think about them. Then when we're left with just the good ones, the next thing we should ask ourselves is, am I inclined towards any of these? Do any of these excite me? Do any of these make me feel like I think I could do this well. I think I would be happy with this. People are always suspicious of that in themselves. Even though God is love and God has made us out of love and he has made us for love, we somehow seem to think that God wants us to implicitly be miserable. If this thing will make me happy, it's probably not God's will for my life. And we should get that thought out of our mind. Why would we think God doesn't want us to be happy? So we should pay attention, first of all, to the things that we think we want and not be suspicious of them just because we want them. We need to admit that we want them so that we know they rank higher than the other things that we're looking at. But then the next question that we might ask ourselves is, out of the things that I don't want, why don't I want them? Now, if the answer is something like, I don't know how to do that, I don't know anything about that, I don't find that interesting at all, I have no passion towards that, then I think it's pretty clear that we don't see what we would even do if we were to choose that option. But if the reason is, well, that scares me, I'm intrigued by it, but I don't even know how I would begin, I'm actually afraid that that might be something God would like from my life, wherever there's fear, we need to pay attention to that. Because we can't deal with the thing itself until we've dealt with the fear. God does not speak to us through fear. And so we need to make sure that we aren't eliminating something because of fear. If we're eliminating something because we just simply don't see the point of it or the purpose of it in our life, no problem. But we cannot act from out of fear. And the decision to eliminate an option because of fear is a problem in itself. It needs to be dealt with on its own. So let's say we've gone through all of that. Okay, there's nothing that I'm disregarding because I'm afraid of it. These are the things that I think I would like. The next thing we have to do is say, okay, Lord, I know I want to serve you. I know I want to please you. This thing that I'm about to choose, I believe will make me happy. I know you want me to be happy. I think it will fulfill me. Even if I find it difficult, even if I am a little afraid of how it will go, but I believe I can love you through this. And if you can say that, then I usually recommend, as a practical technique, give yourself a little deadline. Say, I'm going to sleep on this, or I'm going to decide by the end of next week. Give yourself some window of time to say, Lord, if you do not want this, then please take this away. Shut this down. Don't let it work. Don't let it happen. And then we have to prepare ourselves for the thanks but no thanks that comes from the Lord. My whole life often feels like one long series of thanks but no thanks, where I think I've devised a really clever way of loving and serving the Lord. And then I present it to him and he says, no, thank you. Go, oh, okay. What are you supposed to do with that? You're supposed to accept it, embrace it in love, in trust and confidence, and then try something else. But if nothing gets in the way, if nothing stops it, if he doesn't make it clear to you that you should not do this, then you do it. You do it with freedom, you do it with confidence, and not second guessing whether or not you're loving God or whether or not this is his perfect plan for your life. You just do it. And then we're living the freedom of the children of God.
I really appreciate the point of checking one's desires and saying, what do you want? Assuming, of course, that it's not sinful, but that perhaps that God would give you the desire of your heart. That actually could be possible. I think sometimes I have fallen into this that, well, because I want it, it definitely means God doesn't want me to have it. Right.
Why would we think that? What kind of God is that?
And I think, why do we think that? This is what I think. Because we have trouble believing we are loved.
Bingo.
Because if we truly believed that we were loved, that question, that wondering would never even enter in our minds. I look at my sons and my daughters, I want the best for them.
Yes.
But when I look at God the Father, somehow I think he wants me to suffer a little bit to get to that best. Maybe someone sees it a little differently than I do, but that's a disconnect. And I realize most of the problems in my life are due to the fact that I just don't believe that God loves me that much.
Exactly right. It's the older brother syndrome from the parable of the prodigal son. He doesn't even go to see that his brother has returned. He's so angry. And I love how it begins when he argues with his father. He says, look, you can tell he means business. Look, I have never left home and I have worked for you all this time. And I've not asked for so much as a young goat to butcher and have a party with my friends. But this son of yours, who goes and wastes all of his inheritance on prostitutes, comes back and you slaughter the fattened calf for him. Right? He is showing that he does not believe that the Father loves him. I've been with you all this time and I've worked like a slave for you. That was the attitude, that was the disposition that he had. And then the father says, son, all that I have is yours. All that I have is yours. If only the son had lived out of that identity, if he had believed that, if he was not begrudgingly staying at home to work with his father out of some sense of obligation, but deep inside he resented that he was doing it. He would have been the first one to throw the party for his brother's return. But instead, he was so consumed by this bitter resentment. And this is the grave danger for Catholics. It's hard to be Catholic. It is hard to follow the precepts of the Church. It is hard to abide by God's commandments. It is hard to live a virtuous and upright life for which at the end of it, we could be canonized saints. And so we can become bitter. We can grumble that we do all the right things and I follow all the laws. But in our heart, we don't do it because we're moved by love. We do it because we just think we have to. And when we do things in our life because we think we have to, we resent God and we reject our free will. But if instead, everything we did out of a response of love to the love of the God who has made us, then we will be filled with joy. Everything we do will be a cause for joy in our life.
What if you're stuck? What if you're stuck and you person's heard that? Okay, I believe it intellectually, but my heart is, there's a disconnect. I have the older brother syndrome, and I just struggle to believe that God really does love me. How do you get out of that?
Well, I think you just have to do something. You have to move. You have to do something. There's a prayer that I often ask my spiritual directees to read and maybe to use often. It's called the Merton Prayer, just because it was written by the priest Thomas Merton. And I know some people have some suspicious things about Thomas Merton or what became of him by the end of his life. And I would say, ignore all that. He wrote a prayer that I think is very meaningful, in which he says, "Lord, I have no idea what you want me to do with my life. However, I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you, and I know that I desire this." And that's all that matters. So instead of going through a long calculation of trying to figure out what I have to do, just choose something. Act. Pick something that you think you would do because you love God. And then don't look back. If it all falls apart, okay, well then, obviously, you can't keep walking down that path. If you come to a dead end, then maybe you have to backtrack or maybe you have to cut through the bushes. But you won't know that until you get to it. And then when you get to it, you'll realize this course correction is a blessing. That this has brought about something in my life that it wouldn't have otherwise. That's the sign of God's love in our life, that he's always there picking things up and fixing things as we go.
Don't want to cut you off, Father. Is there any other principle that you would like to share that would help a person discern God's will?
Our former vocation director used to say that he doesn't want to see anyone's tombstone that has written on the bottom, "still discerning." So that's my point. Make a decision. Do something. And don't be afraid that you're going to displease God or screw up your life. Just love. Love and do what you will.
Thanks, Father, for all your words of wisdom. Appreciate you today, and I hope our listeners do as well. I'm going to ask you a comment below in the comment sections. Share with us what stood out to you and why. And oh, hi, sweetie. This is what happens when we're recording in homes. Do you want to say bye to you? Want to say bye?
Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Father.
See ya.